We're continuing to move through the prophecy of Amos. A unique prophet. Remember the context for Israel. They had peace and prosperity. For any president in an election, that's a sure guarantee of re-election. The two P's. And Israel was enjoying both. Yet, as a parallel to us today, in peace and prosperity, Israel had never been further from the Lord. And it was going to cost them dearly. God's judgment was going to come down upon them in a mighty way, and it did. And the prophet was lamenting that circumstance to them. So it's amazing. You know, there's an old adage I've heard before, and you have too. The more things change, the more they stay the same. You ever heard that? Well, that's true here. Thousands of years later, with the precepts here, keep going over and over and over. You know, you think after a while we'd get it. But we don't. Same things are occurring. Amos is one of the minor prophets. He's not an Isaiah. He's not an Ezekiel. He's not a Jeremiah. But, you know, I heard an elder referencing the minor prophets one time, and I like the way he phrased this. He says, you know, the major prophets were like a big paintbrush. You know, you cover a lot of territory with a big paintbrush. We were going to paint this room here, we'd need a big paintbrush, right? You wouldn't want one of those little bitty ones, right? Be here forever. So a big paintbrush, like a large prophet, has this place. However, when you want to get down to the details, when you want to look at the finer points, I need a smaller brush. And that's what the minor prophets were. They were that minor, smaller brush that would illuminate and bring out details that you couldn't do with a big brush. Hence, we have Amos, as well as others, that gave us the details of what God's children were faced with and what their challenges and their priorities and their lives and their failings and their successes. And we look. Remember last week we started out by, remember, the Lord called His bride, His beloved, His chosen nation. He called them cows. Called the women heifers. Called the men bulls. As a related to their behavior as a stumbling, bull-headed bull that'll tear down a fence. And God called, you know, we call one another a heifer or a bull, why we'd get offended. Well, that's what God called His people. He was just trying to get their attention. So we went through that fourth chapter, which brings us today to the fifth chapter. Last week was trying to backtrack and look at some of Israel's past. He was refreshing their memory of what they had gone through. Beginning with chapter 5, the prophet speaking on behalf of the Lord is moving forward. And this is a picture of their future. And the prophet was telling them that in this day. He said, verse 1, chapter 5, "Hear ye this word, which I take up against you, even a lamentation, O house of Israel." Isn't that interesting how he says, "I'm going to prophesy against you"? You go over to the book of Romans in the 11th chapter, and you find Paul as almost as an afterthought here. He's talking about Elijah, and he uses the terminology that Elijah prophesied against Israel. That's strange, isn't it? You know, or excuse me, he didn't prophesy. He made intercession. I'm sorry. Elijah made intercession to God against Israel. You know, if you're praying for me, and I hope you are, I hope you do, as we pray for one another, I want you to make intercession for me. I want you to lift me up to the Lord on my behalf. Elijah prayed to God against them. Well, that's what happened here. He's prophesying against Israel. Even a lamentation, O house of Israel. The virgin of Israel is fallen. The virgin of Israel is fallen. She shall no more rise. She's forsaken upon her land. There is none to raise her up. Israel was a virgin. This was a nation that had known no man. They had never been ruled over by anyone else. Israel was a chaste virgin, the bride of Christ. And God had built around that nation His peculiar people, His people of certain ownership. He had, just as God had done around Job in His day, He had built around them a hedge. The hedge is fixing to be removed. God's going to lift the force field, as it were, and the enemy will rush in. God had protected His people. She was a virgin. That's fixing to come to an end. The virgin of Israel is fallen. For thus saith the Lord, the city that went out by 1,000 shall leave 100. And that which went forth by 100 shall leave 10 to the house of Israel. God's people were greatly reduced in number. Even in battle, when they would fight a battle, used to, they would go out, Brother Walton, in a battle, and the victory was always God's. Remember that. God was fighting their battles for them, and they would go out by hundreds, and they would come back in hundreds. In fact, they'd come back with more. 100 goes out, 10 come back. God had removed the hedge. Now, it's amazing as we read this and as we look at this and we see as this move forward, even in the midst of their condition, of their spiritual idolatry, of their spiritual wickedness, of their spiritual self-obsession, God says, hear me and live. Seek me, and I will draw you back, O my beloved virgin bride. He loves His people that much. But seek not Bethel. When we talked about Bethel. Seek not Gilgal. Remember, we talked about Gilgal. That was a place of a storied past, and God's people get to worshiping their history. Or, let me tell you what happened at our church. Why such and such preacher came out of our church. Same problem at the church at Pergamos. We talked about that last week. They got to glorying in their own past. And God had blessed them. But brethren, one of the signs that we're in trouble spiritually is when we glory in our past in the church. God never told us to do that. He said move forward. Seek not Bethel. Enter not into Gilgal and pass not to Beersheba. Same thing. Same thing happened in Beersheba. Why? Why, that's where covenants were made. This was a wonderful place. But they were glorying in their past. For Gilgal shall surely go into captivity, and Bethel shall come to naught. Seek the Lord, and you shall live. Lest he break out like fire in the house of Joseph, and devour it, and there shall be none to quench in Bethel. Ye who turn judgment to wormwood, and leave off righteousness in the earth. I know what wormwood is. We sing about it. We remember the wormwood and the gall. Remember that thought? Wormwood was an aromatic wood. And it put out an aroma. And the aroma was pungent. It was green in color, yet it had a bitter taste. It was bitter. And the children of God, you know what gall is? Bitter is gall. You've heard that? As related to the captivity and the slavery that Israel was in, or God's people were in down in Egypt, that was gall. That was bitterness. That's why they ate bitter herbs, which was lettuce, to remember their affliction that was in Egypt. And God saying, you will take judgment, the judgment of God, and you will turn that into bitterness. Seek him that maketh the seven stars and Orion. Isn't that amazing? Seek him who made the stars, who spoke them into existence. I love over in the book of Genesis and the creation account. And by the way, before long, we're going to look at that. We're going to look at that closely. In terms of God speaking this world into existence from nothing to what He made. And Moses writes that by inspiration of God Himself. And after all the things that are made here, he concludes the matter by saying, and He made the stars also. Wow. Almost as an afterthought. You know, He made plants and trees, and He made mountains, He made seas, He made sand, He made rocks. He made the animals. He formed us. And all of this for us. And He made the stars also. And here is the prophet talking about that. Seek him that maketh the seven stars and Orion, and turneth the shadow of death into the morning, and maketh the day dark with night, that calleth for waters out of the deep, and poureth them out upon the face of the earth. The Lord is His name. Remember earlier, it was concluded by Him saying, the Lord of hosts, the Lord of the armies is His name. The Lord is His name. This Lord that strengtheneth the spoiled against the strong. Our God strengthens the spoiled against the strong. What's the spoil? That's not talking about my grandkids. Okay? Or your grandkids or anybody. You know, when an army would go forth and God would give them the victory, you've heard the expression, to the victor goes the spoils. And that's okay if you're on the receiving end of being the spoils. But that's not what he says here. To the spoil, to those who have been overcome, to those who have been taken prisoner, your side lost. Therefore, on the losing side, you are taken captive. You are the spoil. And his promise to us is to you who are the spoiled, to you by God Himself is given the strength I remember as a young man, as a young boy, I was probably 12, 15 years old. And I remember one time, and it seems like this brother was from Missouri. I don't remember, but there was an elder who came when I was a boy, and he came to our church to preach, and he was one of the spoiled. Let me explain. He was an elder, and he preached, and he told privately some of his experiences. He had served in World War II, and he was a POW in a German prison camp. Horrendous conditions. You know, they had the Geneva Convention. They didn't care about that.
That's right.
And this man, here's what I remember about his experience as one of the spoiled. When his camp was liberated, they took all those prisoners that were there and they took them to eat, and they wouldn't give them much food because they had been without food for so long. Had they overeaten, it would have been worse. I mean, that's hard to imagine, but that's what we're told. So they limited the food that they could eat for until their body was back able to take nourishment. And he related this experience. He says, I was walking down that mess line. He says, and I was so hungry. Till there was sitting right there on that line, there was a full loaf of bread. He said, and I was so hungry, I said in my mind, he says, I think I can eat that whole loaf. That's hungry. But you know, him as the spoiled, he was given strength. And that's the promise of God, that his spoiled would be given strength, so that the spoiled shall come against the fortress, and that the spoiled will ultimately be the victor in Christ, in Jesus. God speaking to his people. I want to pause here for a moment. You know, last week, we began looking at Matthew chapter 23. Because when we read this and we see God's observation to his people about their condition, there's a strong parallel in that what Christ observed to his Jewish brethren in the 23rd chapter of the book of Matthew, when he's preaching to them. Remember, he starts out speaking to his disciples, but then he moves forward and he begins making observation about those Pharisees. You know, our God's an amazing thing. He gave us, in his word, everything that Israel and that you and I need to grow and to prosper. Everything we need. And then the same way in that day and age. But they did what we do by nature. See, God gave them the structure. He gave the parameters of what he wanted. So, what does man do with it? Man adds on a superstructure. We build layer upon layer upon layer. And then when we get enough layers of the superstructure built, then we add a megastructure. So that what man does, there's no end to it. You know, brother, and this applies, what we're looking here applied to a nation. And no doubt this can apply to us as a nation today. I don't know that that's totally the application, but I think it can. But I think more importantly, this applies to Jerry. I look in here and I see Jerry. I see my condemnation. I see my judge, God's judgment upon me. And when you read this, I'm condemned. I am under conviction that he's talking about me. It can apply to me, to my family. It can apply to a church. So if we want to apply this as a nation, yeah, I guess parts of this will fit. But I think it's broader than that. You know, there's a lot of discussion today about the deep state. If you know, you watch the news, you know, we hear about the deep state. The Pharisees set up a deep state. It's not anything new. Only the terminology is new. The Pharisees set up that superstructure, that megastructure, and it was in fact a deep state. God had Jesus had the greatest disdain for them. He had the greatest rebuke for them because they had taken the simplicity of Moses' law, Moses' structure, the things that God had given, and they had twisted it and perverted it for their own ends. In fact, of all of the rebukes that the Lord has, His greatest was always reserved for the Jews embodied in the Pharisees. So I want us to continue forward and to get a picture of what they did and what they were up against and how this might relate to some of, to us today. Now, he said, "Brother Jerry, you just bored me out of my gourd." Well, first of all, this is important. And regardless of our age here, there's going to be some application to what we're going to look at here in Jesus' observation about these Pharisees that will apply to each of us, regardless of station or age. And so we're in Matthew 23. And it seemed like last week I left off at verse 15. So let's take up at 16. I think this is important to look at Jesus' observation and for me to look at Jerry and say, am I under conviction of what the Lord rebuked them for? What does he say in verse 16? "Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. But whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he's a debtor." Huh? What does that mean? Let me read all of this through, because he's going to use that example and he's going to repeat that same principle that's there. Verse 17, "Ye fools and blind, for whether it is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctified the gold? And whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing. But whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon the altar, he's guilty. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Whoso therefore shall swear by the altar sweareth by it and by all things thereon. And whoso shall swear by the temple sweareth by it and him that dwelleth therein. And he shall swear by the heaven sweareth by the throne of God and by him that sitteth thereon." What's he saying in here? It's really a matter of a man and his word. That's really what's under consideration. The Pharisees were pretty good connivers. They were wordsmiths. You know what a wordsmith is? Somebody that's able to take a word and if he abuses that talent or ability, twist the meaning to where it's unrecognizable. And that's what the Jews do. The Pharisees would obligate themselves to something and they say, I will swear by the temple in Jerusalem to do what I've said I'm going to do. But what if he had not put that last part in there? He said, y'all can't hold me to nothing because you see, I should have sworn by the altar or the gold that's in the temple. Now, if I swear by the gold in the temple, why, you hold me to that. That's what the Pharisees, that's how, that was their mental thought. Everybody wants an out. Everybody wants an escape hatch to where I don't have to do what I've agreed to do. We don't think that way today, do we? The Lord says, what's the difference between the temple and the gold that adorns the temple? You people that are always looking for an out to keep from doing to what you covenanted to do. And the Lord answers that. Remember back in the Sermon on the Mount, let's go back to Matthew chapter 5. The Lord's going to deal with this issue right here. Matthew 5. Verse 33. Again, ye have heard that it has been said of them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself. The Old Testament said, don't forswear yourself. What does that mean? That means don't fail to do what you've said you'll do. That's what that means. The Old Testament says, your word's your bond. Don't forswear yourself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. If you say you're going to do something, you don't swear by anything. Your word is your bond.
Right.
Period. Next verse, this is the Lord speaking. He said, but I say unto you, swear not at all. Neither by heaven, for heaven is God's throne. It's not yours to start with. I can't collateralize something that's not mine. Why? If I want to go borrow some money, think about this. If I want to go down to the bank and borrow some money, and they said, you got any collateral? I said, yeah, I got Bro Walton's car. And, oh, he doesn't know anything about it, but that's going to be all right. Right? How does that sound? Now, knowing him, he'd let me do it. But you see the point? I can't collateralize something that's not mine to do so. And that's what the Lord's telling them here. He said, you can't swear by something that doesn't belong to you because the heavens are not yours. That temple is not yours. All you have is your good name. All you have is your good word. The integrity of your word. Wow. You say, well, Brother Jared, that's pretty basic stuff. It ought to be. But we're straying so far away from that today that unless it's signed, sealed, delivered, notarized 10 times in front of 20 witnesses, there's going to be somebody in some circumstance to try to get out of the deal that was made. But you know, for the right kind of people, none of that's needed. And I don't say this with any braggadocio. I say this with the absolute humility and joy. Years ago, my dad and I purchased a business from a man. An ongoing concern. And it was on a handshake. And we did everything we said we'd do. And that man did everything he said he'd do. Now, it got to the point down the road where we had to have things memorialized. But, brethren, that's just doing what we said we'd do. Are you that one? If you say something, do you do it? Or do we look for an out? Do we want to, there again, I'm backtracking to a few weeks ago, do we want to play the victim? Jesus said, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne. Young ones, even as young as you are, if you say something, do what you say. If you tell mama and daddy that I'm going to do this chore, or I'm going to do that chore, do it. Keep your word. 65-year-old man, if I say something, I'm going to try to do it. I'm going to do it. And to the best of my ability, I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. It's what Jesus told me to do. Because in doing that, I'm going to prove what I say I believe. You got that? In doing what He told me to do, I'm going to prove to witnesses that I believe what I say I believe in my heart. Elder that's gone, who I love dearly, been dead for several years, was a wonderful, sweet pastor up in North Mississippi. He said there used to be a time, and he's not saying it was not at that time, he said when any member of a Primitive Baptist church within this region, I'm talking about North Mississippi, they were known as people of their word. And if they told you to do something, you could put it in the bank. I'm not saying that's not the way today, and I believe that in many circles, and in most circles, that's the way it is today. Thanks be to God that we practice what we say we believe. And we prove that this that's in our heart is evidenced by our faithfulness to the integrity of our word. Or by the earth, for it is His footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it's the great city. You can't swear by something that you don't own. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. Here's the answer. But let your communication be what? Yes, yes. Nay, nay. What's Jesus telling us? Let, if you say yes, do it. If you say no, same way. Let your words be weighty. Let them be words of integrity. Now here comes the hard part, y'all. Well, what if we're in a situation to where the other person doesn't keep their end of the bargain? That's a good question. Are we absolved? No. No. I just got to do what I said I'm going to do. Because, Lord, You're the judge. You're going to work it all out. But I don't have the license to not do what I said I would do when I am failed. That's in God's hands. He's the interpreter. That's what the hymn tells us. He's the interpreter. He will make it plain. Let your communication be yea, yea, and nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Going back to Matthew 23. My time is drawing to a close. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe, 10% tax, 10% tax of mint and anise and cumin. That's spices. Why? Because the law said do it. You are so precise and you are so godly, and you want everybody to know that you are just so into the ways of religiosity, and you do, you pay even 10% on your spices that you, I guess, sell. I don't know. But you have omitted the weightier matters of the law of judgment, mercy, faith. These you ought to have done and not to leave undone. Now, does he tell them don't pay tithe? He doesn't say don't pay tithe. He said, but don't be showy about it. Ye blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Skip down here, verse 26. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup, that the outside of them may be clean. You know, they were clean freaks. The Pharisees were clean freaks. They would clean the outside of a bowl immaculately. The part we could see. But the part on the inside, well, you know, even according to hygiene, isn't that amazing? They were their own worst enemy. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first and then that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean as well. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, for you are like unto whited sepulchres. Oh, you know what a sepulchre is? It's huge, grandiose tomb. Go out to a cemetery sometime and you see these big marble encasements that people are buried in. And on the outside, they look grandiose and gorgeous. You are like that, he says. That which is on the outside appears beautiful, but what's on the inside? Dead men's bones. That's y'all, he said. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous. Why, you go back to our forefathers and you put all these flowers and you memorialize the men of old and you, those that were slain, and you have the audacity to say, why, had we lived in that day, why, we'd have never killed a prophet. Why, it was just those rebellious people that did that. Give me a break. The Lord rebukes them. Skipping down to verse 37, there are several more observations that the Lord gives to His people about the Pharisees. Then He pronounces a judgment upon the Pharisees and Israel. After all of these things that have been listed here, and these are words that you know. And He says, verse 37, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that stonest the prophets. He's talking to the Pharisees.
Right.
Thou that stonest the prophets and killest them that are sent amongst thee. How often? This is His lamentation. This is the lamentation of Jesus. How often would I have gathered you as a hen gathers her chicks beneath her wing, and you would not. Behold, your house, your family, your nation is left unto you desolate. Your nation is left unto you barren. Now here's where it gets scary. You will see me no more. That's what Jesus told His elect people. You will see me no more until you say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. That's God's judgment upon His people. Now, brethren, this is a parallel to Amos. That's where this is going. That's what this is going to be, almost a companion, as it were, to how this is going to unfold with Amos. I want to notice these words here. You will see me no more until. That word until is an interesting word. It can mean two different things. It means it's going to happen. Or it means it might happen. I'm not going to go to the airport until I schedule a flight to go out of town. Does that mean I'm going to the airport? But I'd have to go to the airport first. You see that? He gave them this promise. I don't believe that's a prophecy. I believe it's ended. His house is unto him desolate. Now, there are many folks that believe that the Jews, and I still today don't know what a Jew is. I don't know how you identify a Jew other than a group of people that identify with a nation over there, which has absolutely nothing to do with this. Because Paul's greatest contribution, and was God-inspired, okay? It was God speaking it, but it, through Paul's mouth. And Paul's greatest contribution was to redefine who Israel is. He is not a Jew that is a Jew outwardly, but he is one that is a Jew inwardly. And circumcision is not of the flesh, it's of the heart. Paul redefines what a Jew is. And I'm looking at some right now. Okay. What does that have to do with that little geography over there in the Middle East? In my humble opinion, absolutely nothing. He may come back there. I don't know. He may. And let me give y'all a clue. Jerry could be wrong. But that's my understanding. I believe Israel is redefined. It's a spiritual kingdom and you're a part of it today. In fact, that's what's going to unfold at the end. I'm giving you some cheat notes here. That's what's going to unfold at the end of the prophecy of Amos. Same scenario that's going to be there. But the Lord put this judgment upon them. He says, you will see, behold. Anytime you see the word behold in Scripture, look out. Something important's fixing to be said. Behold, your house is left unto you barren. Empty. That's the lamentation of Christ right there. So, I'll stop right there. We're moving ever so slowly toward the end. I would encourage you to read forward. And so we're going to move through some of this a little more rapidly. I don't want to get bogged down, but I want to move this forward as we can see how this book of Amos was so integral to the time that it was there. And as we meditate upon this, we might can see our parallels to this, to me personally. So may the Lord bless this effort, and may He smile upon it, and may He shine upon all of us. We're going to stand now and we're going to sing a hymn. If there's one here, we're going to issue the gospel call. If there's one here that wishes to unite with the Lord's church, what a privilege it is. And as soon as the service is concluded, I would encourage you strongly to come speak to me after service. We're going to stand now and sing a hymn. Brother Walt, do we have a hymn?
188, O Christ, He is the
Number 188, you may stand if you wish.